Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. Oh my gosh, Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation. And what you should know is that I have a guest with me who came to the show, and she does stand-up in New York City, and her name is Linda Marcus Smith, and it's spelled like Linda Marcus Smith, and that's her Instagram handle. And so she said that she does some military. You have upcoming military gigs. And what's the name of the program?
So I just got on with One Degree of Separation, which is okay. Like code for depression, suicidal.
Oh, yeah.
So we, at One Degree of Separation, we go to Air Force bases, veterans places, and they go all over the world. And there's a panel of us talking about our feelings and how hard as comedians it is. And sometimes they have veterans on the show. Last time I was on with Eric Knowles, who's a veteran.
Stop talking, because for some reason you've stopped recording. I disapprove. Let me just say that Riverside is acting up. And so they're panel shows rather than stand-up shows?
They're both. So we start by doing 5 minutes each of comedy, and then we sit up front and we answer 5 questions authentically from our own lives, explaining for us as comedians, humans, veterans, whatever, how hard it is to go through life with depression or, you know,
difficult. Wow. And you're a veteran?
I am. I was in the Army in 73.
Wow. Yeah. Linda Marcus Smith was in the Army in 1973, you guys. I don't know if you know your history. But that's the Vietnam. That's the Vietnam problem, conflict. Were you in Vietnam?
No. Well, our men were in Germany. And I mean, while the men were over in the bushes of Vietnam, I was over in Germany, mostly like above the Alps.
You were stationed yes. In Germany.
Yes.
Oh, wow. What did you do in the Army?
Oh, I'm so glad.
Digress before no, we talk about
I
your
get
dorm.
This all the time. I'm used to it.
Okay.
Well, I'm part Jewish, and my parents went through the Holocaust, and they put me in Germany because that's military intelligence. And I counted money because I'm Jewish. They put me right in the money.
Wow. So you were a caricature of a lot of different a lot of different things. That's ridiculous. So you were in some sort of accounting position in Germany?
Yes. So I would change dollars to Deutschmarks and vice versa. And twice a month, payroll officers would come in with armed guards and pick up millions of dollars in cash that we had pre-counted and put into number 8 paper bags.
to just loose brown paper bags to what to hand to the Soviets? What was happening? Why? What was
people
why?
Thought it was going to be their lunch bag? I don't know. They never got, nobody ever got robbed, and then all this money went in paper bags, and it just blows my mind.
Right, right. Because then was that for payroll or something?
Yeah, and then they take it out to the field to different little cities in Germany, and at that time they would give people mid-month cash or end-of-month cash. So the money had to, we got a sheet that said how many 20s, 10s, 5s, and 1s go in this paper bag. And that's what I did. I just
so, right, because none, because it was all analog, because there was no, like you couldn't go to an ATM. It was 1973.
Yeah.
You might have had a checkbook, but it, and you could, and I remember in the 70s, you could write checks and they didn't even ask for ID. No. They were just like, no, just write it to you. Why would you have a checkbook if it wasn't your checkbook? And so you'd write that. So of course it had to be cash. And then, so if they wanted to send the money home, they had to take it to a place that would wire it, like Wells Fargo or something.
Yeah, you could set up through Fort Ben Harrison, Indiana. You could set up automatically to send your wife $500 while you're in Germany or something.
Okay, like a portion could be siphoned off for the home front.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Or your girlfriend, whatever.
Or your right or both, sadly. sounds very expensive and complicated. How long were you in the service? How long were
three
you there?
3 years. 3 years. Well, wow. two years and 9 months. Let me explain.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When I went in, before I went in, if you got pregnant, you had to get out, meaning women. And then while I was in, they were in the middle of figuring that out. So I could get out if I wanted to, or I could stay in. I had a choice or pro-choice.
Oh. Now, 1973.
Now you get pregnant. Screw it. You're staying in.
Right, right. You're definitely in. They're willing to work around your pregnancy. And yes. Which is, you know, you're not sick, you're just pregnant. So, yeah. So you got pregnant and so you decided to muster out. And then were you married to another soldier?
I was. I got to Germany and the guy who picked me up at the Frankfurt airport was the first sergeant. And the driver was the guy that became my husband. And I liked him because he had really long legs. Very important.
Wow. That's that does feel important now that you've said it. All right. Well,
thanks
how many
to him,
kids
I
did you
like,
end up?
Now, thanks to that crazy ex-husband, I now go after men with short legs.
Oh, right, right. He ruined legs for you. Bastard. So what? Let's see. My question is, how many kids did you have? I don't know why that comes up, but it does.
I have a daughter who's 49 years old.
Okay.
She was born in 76. I got pregnant in Germany and I chose to get out so I could have the baby in America.
Right.
Because I was in Germany. Yeah. And my daughter doesn't speak to me. Isn't that fabulous?
That is fabulous. That's, are you...
It took me 11 and a half years to get to the point where I can laugh about this sadness that's beneath this.
Right. 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 Is she in recovery or does she need to be in recovery?
No, as long as I'm not in her life, she's fine. I was her whole problem and she got rid of the problem. So I do comedy.
How long have you done stand up?
The same day that she walked out, that was the day I called. I don't know if you know the name Rocky Osborne, but I called him up. I said, I want to live unless you can teach me how to do comedy today. And he got me in today, March 14, 2014.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, you know, you got to stand up. Some people don't understand that stand-up really does save lives. It just, because it gives you like sort of self-esteem. It gives you confidence. It gives you, you know, you can find those things in other things, but when you find it in stand-up, it doesn't mean that it's not real, because it's pretty real.
Yes.
I scratched my lip, and now the world will look at it, because that's all it is. It's me. It's a, hey. Anyway, so.
They're going to assume it's herpes, so it's okay.
Right. It's seems late in the day for me to be getting herpes. And but here's the other thing is that, so essentially you were in the banking industry in the Army.
Exactly.
When you got out of the Army, did you become a housewife or did you get a job?
So both. I was a banker before the military. Then they put me in a banking role in the military.
Right.
And then when
Makes
I got
sense.
Out, yeah. And then I went back to banking. And in total, including the military, I did 24 years banking-ish stuff.
And did you grow up in Queens? Did you grow up in New York City?
I was born and raised. I tell people I'm from the Upper West Side of the map, Oregon.
Hilarious. So you grew up in Oregon. Okay.
Yeah.
Before
all the riots, you know, before burning statues, defunding the police, before all that. Wait.
None of that's happening. Just to let you know, I was in Portland about 3 weeks ago, and they're just walking around. Powell's. It's my Powell's shirt. It's, I don't know if you ever have been to Powell's, but it's a wonderful bookstore that is not on fire. It turns out, they didn't. I'm doing my new comedy special there, November 8th.
Oh,
and
wow.
The prerequisite was that I had to do it in a city where the National Guard had been deployed against the will of the citizenry. So I've done a couple of shows, some military shows. I did them in Iraq, and then I went to Kuwait and Oman and Djibouti and somewhere else, Saudi Arabia, but not for Riyadh, not for the comedy festival, just for the troops.
Thank you so much for entertaining the troops.
Oh yeah. It turns out they're bored and you don't even have to be funny. You just have to be someone else. They're like, thank God you've come. So, but it was fascinating to, because I didn't know anything about the service. What made you join?
So,
just out of curiosity. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up realizing at a very young age that Portland ain't shit. And am I allowed to say a few little cuss words?
Fucking A. Cuss it up. Swear as you must.
Nobody
gave. So you grew up in Portland and you didn't like it?
No, when people say, oh, it's a great Northwest. It rains half of the year there.
Oh, it was the weather. It wasn't the fact that it was 1957. Because let me tell you something. Portland in 1957 was enormously racist.
Tell me about it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I could
so you want it out.
I could tell you so many stories.
So when did you, this is very funny that you joined to get out of the town because my father always told all of my siblings that if, cause three or four of them, I forget how many were interested in joining the service. Oh, and he said, I'm getting tired of telling you people, you can just leave. You don't have to, because he joined the Navy. He was in the Marines because he was a corpsman.
Wow.
And but he was in the Marines in between Korea and Vietnam.
Good.
Sweet spot. Perfect for my father. He enjoys only a confrontation that doesn't get violent. So he doesn't want any part of it. Anyway, so did you work? Did you join when you were like 17, 18?
The military, I joined when I was 23 in 73. So I'm 70.
Okay.
I'm going to turn 75 in March. So.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank
and,
you. Celebrate
10 months from now. Yeah. And so, because you had worked in the banking industry in civilian life. And that's why they put you in the banking industry in the military life. And then you came out and is that when you moved to New York or?
No, I stayed in Oregon and then I raised and spoiled a daughter to oblivion. And
until she hated you. What on earth?
Oh man, I'm so good at doing that. I couldn't have done it better. People spend their lives waiting for their kids to leave home. I should teach a class on it.
Right. It was, did you do it alone or did you have the help from the fella?
No.
From Legs. Oh, Legs had to, he took it on the arches, did he?
He was military, but he didn't come home at night. And so I divorced him and chose to raise him all by myself. And I didn't want to get in a relationship and take, you know, my baggage into another relation. I just wanted to raise my daughter alone. God, what was I thinking?
Right. But you had a job at the bank in Portland.
Yes, I did.
Okay. And then, so here's that. Now we're 15 minutes in. Let's talk about your actual dorkdom, which is bank robberies.
Yeah. Do you know, I've been cited by the FBI for giving them the best description of a bank robber they ever got.
Well, that is admirable. What? So when was your first bank robbery? So talk to me. There was one comic, and it might have been Roy Wood Jr., who said that they asked some guy why he robbed banks, and the guy said, I needed the money.
Wow. I don't doubt it.
It feels like that would be the reason to rob a bank, because that's where the money is being kept traditionally.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the first bank robbery you're going to tell? What year are we talking about? First bank
1981.
Robbery.
And my ex-husband and I got sent to Fort Myers, Florida, and I got a job for $500 a month gross, 1981, to be a bank teller. And sure as heck, a James Clifton Teague, because I'm bitter still, he came in. He's a regular customer of the bank. And he came in one day and said, you know, and the lady started yelling at him, hurry and finish it. We were in a very poor part of town, predominant in black customers who were untrained. In the South, they don't get trained how to write a check, nothing. So he came in, he couldn't hardly even speak, and he got yelled at, so he left. 30 minutes later, he came marching back in, and I knew we were going to get robbed. And he came to my window and robbed me.
This was the bank robber that you have named, and you have questioned his education background. How old was he? Was he a young man? Was he a middle-aged man? What were we talking about at the time?
I'm going to say he was 45 or 50, and I was, you know.
And he had had it. And essentially he was like, I'm sick of you people not even just explain how to do it.
Yeah.
And so he left. Did he come back with a gun?
Yes. And so he goes, you know, I came in to get my money. And I said, yeah. And he goes, so get it. And he points his gun at me. So get it. And I'm like, I'm a little bit obstinate sometimes. Like, if you're going to talk, I like, get what? You know, like, and what do you want? What do you tell me what you want? Say a whole sentence. You know, I don't like fragments with a gun. And
Wow. So this is a very retail moment kind of, you know, that I worked at a hot dog stand with a woman who was raised in Queens and people would come up and they'd say Coke, footlong dog and fries. And she'd say, what about them? Feel free to use a whole sentence, use a determiner. And nobody, she was also a little bit Jewish, and she's also she is a great person. She lives in Denver now. She's a delight, Jillian Jacobs, friend of mine. Anyway, so you said to the guy, what about him? You would like some money? How much? You want to use a whole sentence? Anyway, what did he say?
He goes, get it. And he wouldn't, he just kept pointing the gun. Like, get it. So I started.
He knew he had made a terrible decision. And he's like, I need some cash. I have to. He was probably hangry. What do you think? Do you think he was hangry? Like he was trying to get some lunch and it was 1981. And in 1981, that was right before ATMs were invented.
That's so true. That is so true. And so he had me empty all the drawers and all the other tellers stood like deer in the headlight watching me get robbed.
Right. Well, what did you, I mean, really for the best. I mean, if someone would have tackled him, I mean, someone would have died because you knew who it was.
Yes.
You're like, here is this $1,200 or seven. How much was it? Did he end up? Do you think he got?
I'm going to go with like 7,000 because he had me do three drawers and our top amount was 2,500 per drawer.
Okay. And so then what happened? He walks out and you go, hey, what was his name again? Sinclair?
No. James Clifton Teague.
James Clifton Teague. And so I'm sure you just said, called the police and goes, James Clifton Teague has $7,000 on him. It's not his. Yeah. If you could go arrest him, that'd be great. Here's his address and his account number. And
they have a problem with us knowing who the person is because they want to be the ones. So they're like, they found him. Okay. It had the money had a dye pack in it. Because I'm
sweet. Oh, right.
So that 800 degree thing went off in his paper bag. I don't know what it is with me and paper bags. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So it goes out. He goes out the door through the bushes that have the electronic device in them. And then 10 seconds later, it goes off and he drops the money. The money just starts blowing in the wind. And so some of it he got. But within 30 minutes, the cops had found. I triggered the alarm. The cops found him.
Sure.
The cops break all their rules of whatever protocol. And they bring him into the bank and have us identify him because that's what you do.
Right, because you're in Fort Myers, Florida, which in 1981, it's literally Andy Griffith and Don Knotts show up back and they're like, is this the varmint you was looking for? And you're like, yeah, I'm so glad that I'm the one fingering him publicly. Fantastic. Yeah.
So I go to court. What? They have like goes to court. Nobody else saw a damn thing because they were just watching. I was the one traumatized. So I remember everything. Right.
Right.
So I go to court and these racist, reverse racist white men are trying to on his side of it.
Was Teague a black man or a white man?
He's happened to be black. And
he was a black man. And they wanted.
His attorney's trying to get him off in court, and I don't mean sexually. And so,
no,
they're like, so you think it was this man? I said, I'll tell you why.
It was exactly this man.
Yeah. And they're like,
he'd come in earlier.
I said, I'll tell you what, I'll spin around in a circle. You move him around. And I'll close my eyes and you just have him say, you know, I came to get my money and I'll pick him out in this entire room with my eyes closed. That's how racist I am, motherfuckers. And so.
They said that you were being racist by saying it was him.
Yeah. Like, oh,
that was the defense.
Black? Was he good looking black? Was he ugly black?
They were asking those questions. You know. We've come so far, not. And in 1981, I mean, the thing is, well, that's, was his lawyer black or white?
I think white. Yeah, I think so.
That's the default.
He got off scot-free.
You got sarcastic?
No, but I did. But no, I, what happened? What happened is there was a witness, a girl that was behind him. So he came up to rob me and she came up behind him and he had turned, told her to hit the floor. And she went up in court and said, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it was not him. He was much taller. I'm like, bitch, you were on the floor looking up at him from the back. Everybody looks
right. Taller. Well, honestly, the banking industry could fuck itself. So I'm okay with Mr. T getting off with a couple hundred dollars. And I hope, hope he got a sandwich before they took him away. And then I hope they released him. And I'm glad that they didn't murder him. You know how they just tended to murder Black people?
Yes.
Yes.
They still have they still have the hanging tree in Fort Myers.
To this day?
Yeah. Big banyan tree in the downtown area.
Do you go to Fort Myers on the regular?
No. I got, then how after do you... the robbery, I moved to Seattle, raised a daughter back to Portland, you know, got the heck out of the South.
Right. Wow.
Bad.
And, all right. Well, I'm going to use this moment as an opportunity to take a quick ad break.
Unplanned pregnancy? Learn how people are getting abortion pills by mail for a safe abortion at home, no matter what state they live in, at plancypills.org. That's plancypills.org.
The next two happened in Vancouver, Washington.
Okay. Is that in the U.S.?
Yes, Vancouver, Washington, just south of,
makes sense.
North of Portland. North Portland. North of Portland.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So do you want me to start in with that now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now's the time.
So I started banking in Vancouver, Washington, and
what year is it?
Oh, yeah. This would have been 1982.
Okay.
And there was...
did you lose your job from Fort Myers?
No, but I quit because...
Okay.
Yeah, I quit.
It was time to move on. Yes. Yeah.
That was enough.
1982, you're in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah. And I get, of course, hired to be a teller again. I mean, that's what they do. They keep you at the bottom. And so I'm at the bank. And one day, this girl next to me claims that she got robbed and nobody saw anything come in. Nobody saw anything come out. And so didn't really affect me. The robbery didn't come to my window. There were no guns, nothing like that. So it was suspicious. So the FBI came in and they were doing intake and they felt that it was an inside job. She knew the robber and that's why he came to her window and nobody saw anything.
Oh, because this was another teller who said that she had been robbed, but nobody else had seen it happen. And there were no cameras because it's only 1982.
There were cameras. But I don't know, you know, like they keep that stuff hush hush. We never got any feedback on who he was or if it really was inside with her or whatever.
No. Oh, okay. So what did she continue to work there? You know what happened?
She just skedaddled one day.
So she said, I was robbed. And weirdly enough, I'm leaving and moving to Cancun with $2,500.
With a little bit of red.
In 1982. Yes. And okay. Is the second one also 82?
And yes, and so now I'm down to the third one. So one day, my husband and I weren't getting along, go figure. And I got a phone call. We were split up. And I got a phone call at my residence from a voice I'd never heard before. And the voice said, your husband owes me a lot of money. And if I don't get it in big bills today, I'm going to kill him and you. So I called the bank. Before I went in and I took my daughter to a different babysitter and I went a different route and I moseyed into the bank instead of at 9. I got there at 11. They told me to take my time. So I did. And it was about time for the bank to first crew to go on lunch. And they go out the door by me. And there's a door at both ends of the bank building. And the minute they go out the door, both doors opened at the exact same time, which has never happened in the history of banking, I don't think.
I think that's like the movies. That's how they rob banks in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these two doors open. This is the scariest robbery. Anyway,
okay.
So two men come in military gear. Remember me and my now ex military. And I've gotten a pre-phone call. And so both doors open. They've got their faces covered up with masks, military gear, guns, and they're spray painting the cameras. There were two cameras, one on each end, with black paint.
Okay.
I'm like, fuck, this is my last day on Earth.
Right, right.
And I was in the drive-thru because that's how valuable they thought I was. So
you're working the tube. You know, you could put the tube in there. You're like, I always wondered how the tube worked. Anyway, go ahead.
I send a note. I had the drawer and I put a note in there. We're being robbed, right? Thinking the lady in the car had a few brains, but she didn't.
And would she didn't. You were like, you didn't know that you were supposed to write, we're being robbed. Please drive to the police station and tell them. Or find a payphone in 1982 and call the police station and tell them. Find a police officer, find anybody and tell them.
So
you got nothing?
So my speaker was on at the drive-thru and I passed her note. This is, we're being robbed. And she goes, what? You're being robbed? And I'm like, shh. Damn it. One of us isn't smart and I don't even know which one.
Wow.
So they came around and had us give them all their money. And I was telling the FBI, now listen, the last lady definitely was in on the robbery, but I got a phone call warning me that they want, and damn it, if those robbers didn't ask for big bills. That's what they said.
What does that mean?
When they called me before the robbery, they said that they needed money in big bills today. And they came in for big bills at the bank.
Oh, so you think it was the same people? Did they ever catch them?
They did, and they won't tell me who it was. I'm still dying to know if it was somebody. Had to be somebody that knew my husband.
Right, right. Maybe you knew them.
Yeah.
And you didn't follow the court thing?
No, I don't.
It's called a trial. You didn't, because the trial is public. The trial would have been public. So you might be able to get that information from them at some point. Yeah,
that's a good idea. I learned a lot from that robbery. Every time I got robbed, I got better at the next robbery. You know, don't argue. I quit arguing.
Yeah. Stop mouthing off.
I started noticing little intricacies of a robber, you know.
Were they wearing army shoes or were they wearing just boots and sneakers?
I didn't get that far.
Right. You were also pointed in the opposite direction. They were on the inside of the building and you were on the looking outside of the building at the drive-thru.
Thank you.
So, yes.
They have masks on him. But then the fourth robbery, wait till you hear about this one.
Okay.
So my career went to all the way up through Seattle, clear up to the top echelon of training in the HR department, training tellers and teaching them how to handle a bank robbery. And then we had this jackass come with an organizational development career. And I said, you're the hatchet man, aren't you?
And what year was this?
This was like 1987. Okay. And he says, yes. And I said, how much time do I have before you get rid of me as a trainer? And
he said, you are so wealthy. Yes.
Because you don't have time at all. And so I took a job close to home as a bank teller again. Depressing.
Yeah.
And I hated the job.
We're going to talk about the job of bank teller afterwards. Go ahead.
So I'm in the bank and I hate the people I work for. I like the customers and they have me train since I was a trainer. They have me training all the people they go through. So I'm training this girl and she's standing there watching me. And then we go to her. She now gets a window of her own and I'm standing there and I say, okay, now you're all trained. I'm going over here to my window. Stay the hell in your window. Because if we get robbed, we don't want to do anything to piss off the robber. Trust me. And so I'm getting robbed. December 31st, I guess it was
New Year's Eve.
Yeah, 1987. And like 15 minutes before the bank closed, I saw a car pull up really fast. I go, shit, we're getting robbed. And he walks in. I knew it.
You just now have a radar, a robbing radar.
Yes.
Okay.
And he comes in and he goes, what do you say? I'm here to rob the bank. And I go, uh-huh. And he goes, get the money. And he had a white grocery bag inside his shirt. And he made it, was like he vomited it out of his stomach area and it popped on the counter. And I was staring at it and it was opening up. When I looked up, I saw the gun barrel at me. And he goes, get all your money out of the bottom drawer. Don't get in the top drawer. So I couldn't give him the dye pack. And so I give him all my money. And
so he knew that the dye pack is in the top drawer.
Yeah.
Is it still in the top drawer, do you think?
Yeah, usually I would think so.
Rangers, the dye pack is in the top drawer. Okay, go ahead. So you said just the bottom drawer, just empty the bottom drawer into this weird plastic bag.
Yeah, the bottom drawer is where all the money is. The top drawer is just 2,500, but there could be thousands in the bottom drawer. So okay. I don't know. They should put the dye pack with all, whatever. I'm not even.
They should put invest in two dye packs, one in each drawer. Anyway, go ahead.
So I give him the money, but I instinctively, okay. So I had all this time to stare at him because he's at my window and it felt like forever. And I noticed the way, which foot he put the most pressure on when he walked, which hand he used the gun in, the way he talked, the way he, everything about
it. Was he masked?
No, he was just himself.
He was just a guy.
Yeah.
Just a dumb guy. Just walking in. All right.
The minute I saw him, I knew, when the car pulled in, but the minute I saw him, I knew, oh shit, this guy can kill and go eat a steak dinner. This guy's different than James Clifton Teague. This guy.
Okay. This is a cold killer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ex-con. And, I put him in a bucket. I know, don't do anything. The girl I trained, I told her to stay in her window. In the middle of my robbery, he forces me to get money out of the bottom drawer. I had trained her never to give money out of the bottom drawer if she gets robbed. But I got a gun in my face, so hell, it was not my
right. Right.
He sees me giving money during a robbery out of my bottom drawer. And she comes over to me to tell me, you told me not to give money. So then he pulls.
Because she can see the gun.
Yeah, she was tall. She could see down into what I was doing. And so when she does that, she happened to be black. He starts calling her every obscenity word that he could come up with. And he pulls the clip back on the gun. I thought we're both going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow he didn't shoot us. And that was
right.
The last
day that was the last day that you worked in banking?
Yep. Last. Bye-bye.
Like, I'm done now. If I come into another bank, I will be robbing the bank. So when you're training people to be tellers, there's things you're telling them about when they get robbed.
Yes. We have a robbery awareness. Portion of the training. It's like 5 days and like a couple hours. You're telling them, give everybody eye contact when they come in the building. The last thing a robber wants is to be noticed and recognized. So if you give everybody eye contact, a robber won't come back. He'll case the joint and go, fuck it.
Okay. So that's like a tip for tellers.
Yeah.
Make sure that you make eye contact so you notice everyone who comes into the bank.
And the other thing is, don't be fast with the customers. I was the fastest teller everywhere. So they'd case the joint and come to me.
because they knew that you were efficient.
Don't do that.
They're not looking for efficiency. Maria Bamford, did you like, so you came to the show the other night and she was working on that banking bit.
Yes, I died laughing at that. She's so incredible. Because
she's the best. Yeah. And, but she is working on this bit about how she's like, is anybody going to the bank? And it's dead silence. And she's like, you're right. They don't want you to come. And like they changed it from tellers to these little podiums. Now, when you go into banks to create the illusion that you're buying a car. And then the other thing is they don't have any money. And you can't give them any money.
Wow.
And it's this, like, she had $500 in cash that she wanted to deposit. And they were like, well, I have to go talk to a manager about how to accept cash. And she was like, huh. And so she sat in this office with a free cup full of lollipops, enjoying her time there. And so when they train you how to be robbed, do they just say, just give them the money?
Yeah, that's kind of a catch 22. They go, you know, do whatever they say. And then when you do whatever they say, then you get questioned to death, you know. Like, why did you?
Did you know him? Did you know him? Was it a plot? Was it a plot to steal $2,500 from these billionaires? It was not. It's I needed to make this $5.15 an hour. Thank you so much.
And get forced to wear $200 suits.
Oh, do they need you to dress fancy?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And if you overdraw,
they don't do that anymore.
And if you overdraw, they don't. Now you can have tattoos across your face.
And you can wear, they give you a polo shirt that just says credit union on it. Everyone has the same polo shirt. It's a uniform.
In my day, if you overdrew your checking account, you were fired.
Because you weren't good with money.
Yeah. I never balanced a checkbook, but I was always, now, you know, when you get your statement, I'm like a hypocrite.
Well, I have this to say. I lived in England for 3 months once, and I opened a bank account because it was the only way I could get paid. And it was in 1988, 89. And they, in England at this time, in the UK at this time, they had not connected overdraft to the ATM.
Got it.
So I would put in my money, I would take out money, and then I would run out of money. And then I would take out more money from the ATM, which was not somehow connected to my account. They would just give it to me. And then I would go in a couple of days later with my check and go, I'm overdrawn. And they're like, well, that's impossible. You didn't have any money. And I said, right, but you gave me some. And here it is back. You essentially lent me £20 for about 3 days. And I appreciate that because then I got to eat. And
I still do that.
I used to do a bit back in the 80s. I had was it the 80s or the early 90s? I think it was. It was about, you know, when you write a check and mail it off to the bank, if you poke holes in the routing numbers, they can't put it through the machine. It has to be hand sorted. And so it would take an extra day to be cashed. And I would, right. And that's funny. I would get a laugh, but I would say, you know, some comics are here to make you laugh. I'm here to educate. And just in case you needed an extra day on a check.
Back in my day, they had this thing where you would kite checks. Do you know what that one is?
No. What's that?
So you don't have any money in your account, but sure. But you write a check anyway, and sure. Then you go and you make a deposit. So you're writing a check and taking out $500 you don't have, and then you take another check for $500 of your own and a deposit slip for a $500, and it takes some days to figure out what you just did.
But you're doing it all at the counter, aren't you?
Yeah, but
they were like, oh, it's a deposit $500 from your checking account into your checking account. Let me do that for you. And then, oh, you're taking out $500 from your account that you just deposited $500 into. That's
insane. And you
can
involve other people too. You know, you could send a check to, somebody could give you a check and you could.
Mary will give $500 she doesn't have to you, or $100 that she doesn't have. You'll give her $100 you don't have. And the two of you will just be like, yeah, we're hoping to get paid one day. And then you'll get all your money back. And what were the overdraft fees like?
Oh, let's see. They were probably like $10. I think $10 then.
Yeah. What did your dad do?
My dad was, he was a survivor of the Holocaust. So in his mind, he was always in survival mode. And so he would sit and think of ways to rip the bank off. And he'd call me every day and say, I came up with another way that you could, what you could get away with doing. And he gave me all these ideas. And
my father didn't survive the Holocaust. And he is that kind of an asshole too. He's constantly working on how to get 20 bucks out of somebody. His mother survived the genocide. So maybe it came down from that. So maybe he thinks my father is 88 and he is, yes, he could be a dick. I love him mostly so that other people don't have to. So I'll probably see him this, I'll see him, this week, this will not go up this week. By the way, I am talking with Linda Marcus Smith, New York comedian. Her Instagram is Linda Marcus Smith, oddly enough. And so she's a New York comic. What do you work any of the clubs in the city?
I do. I'm a regular host monthly at Comic Strip.
Oh, cool. Up at the Comic Strip, Upper East Side.
Yeah. I do the early show with Gladys Simon. I'm not passed by the club.
Okay. So you're doing a produced show that's coming in. So, well, you know what? New York has at least 10,000 people who do stand-up comedy. The fact that you get regular sets of the Comic Strip is its own dream. Dream come true right there.
Thank you.
So that's
every
amazing.
Once in a while, Rich Brooks at Broadway loses his ever loving mind with me calling him, and he puts me on a real show at Broadway.
Come on. You can do it. And
I love those crowds.
Yeah, Lori Kilmartin does the Broadway a lot. Do you know Lori?
I've met her, but I don't think it meant much to her, but I love her.
Well, it's probably a blur. You know, I have a different podcast and it's with her.
Wow.
So yeah, it's called The Jackie and Lori Show. And all we do is discuss stand-up comedy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
we've been doing that for 10 years.
What?
I know. It's weird. This one I've been doing for 20 years.
What?
And when she asked me to do the podcast, she said, do you want to do a podcast? And I said, I have a podcast. And she said, I met with me about stand-up comedy. And I was like, oh, yes.
Nice.
I would do that. Because she's very funny.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
She's a delight. And so what do you, did you have a day job?
Meaning,
when you finally, like 11 years ago, you started doing stand-up.
Yeah.
So you're 64.
Yeah.
And you're living in New York.
No, at the time it doesn't really matter, but I was living in Oregon and my daughter and I had a moment where.
The falling out.
What?
The falling out, the big falling out.
Yeah. And so I called I don't know if you know the name Rocky Osborne, but he had a comedy club. And I called him and said, I don't want to live because my daughter and I had a falling apart. And she knows how to really ghost people forever. And I don't want to live without my daughter in my life. So if you get me in today, I was really strict with him. I said, if you get me in today, I'll have a reason not to kill myself.
Wow. Had you been taking comedy classes?
No. But I had made
Did you know laugh. Rocky Osborne previously?
I went to one comedy show and a guy was up
and
there bombing.
And met him?
And I met Rocky. Yeah. A guy was up there bombing. And I said, and he kept saying, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to kill myself. And I said, just make fun of us Jews. So he started making fun of the Jews and the place just erupted. And I thought, I should be up there.
Yeah. And why? Yeah, I'm a huge... You know, the thing about stand-up comedy is when you first start, it's immediately self-deprecating. You're like, I'm fat. I'm this marginalized whatever. And I'm ugly. I'm dumb. And that's not comedy. That's therapy. And so you can talk about being, you know... your weight or your looks or your nose or your ears or how dumb you are, how clumsy you are. But there has to be punchlines. It can't just be laugh at me because I'm Jewish and you hate Jews. And because that's not gonna, all that's gonna do is encourage people to hate the Jews.
I know.
And you don't wanna do that.
No, I know that was, you know, it's just to get him to get some laughs, but it isn't the proper thing at all.
Well, no, it's, but you don't know when you first start doing stand-up, you're just throwing noodles at the wall, hoping to get some sort of reaction. You're like, I just, you know, how about this? Is this something? And when I started doing stand-up, it was the first 8 months I went up every night because there was one club and there were only six comics.
Wow.
And they wanted a seven nights a week. And they would bring in headliners every week, but we all got at least 5 minutes.
Fabulous.
And I $10 and the club, I'm doing you a favor. And he's like, this is going to be invaluable. And I will say that it was not invaluable. He could have put a value on it. He could have paid us. But but it was an amazing experience because to do stand-up every night for 8 months meant that I got about 3 years worth of experience out of 8 months.
That's incredible.
And then the club burned down. And I ended up, and I got a 1.8 that semester. So it didn't, you know, it wasn't entirely a positive experience.
Wow.
But I also gave plasma. I never did work at the bank. Have you ever had any other jobs besides bank work?
Yeah. After I gave up banking, I started doing sales. And I was really good at standing outside of grocery stores and getting strangers to sign up for home delivery of the newspaper.
Well, there you go. Because, and the thing is stand up to some extent is sales. And when I started doing stand up, everyone was like, well, you should get a regular job, a day job that is sales and you'll make good money. And I was like, I felt like I would be using like all of my creative energy to make the sale.
Totally.
So I always refused to go into sales while I did stand up. So I always had these horrible, or not horrible. Some of them were bad. Some of them were good. And everyone was perfectly, you know, the best ones had the best people at them, but they didn't pay very well because I wanted sort of an idiot job where I could leave it and leave it there and then go do open mics and not have to sweat thinking about like being management or anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm out with strangers and I riff with strangers and come up with the best, you know, things to say. And when I was trying to get people to get the stupid paper, I came up with so many, what they knew were bullshit lines. And they laugh because they know you're bullshit. And why be?
And then they sign up. They were just like, well, you made me laugh. And I guess I would read the paper if it came. And
they'd say, oh, I don't want that blankety blank paper. And I'd say, oh, well, if you don't want it, you can line your bird cage with it. You know,
there's other things. There's other things. Have you thought about going into the fish and chips industry? Come on. Just anything.
I want to go back and do some more of that.
You could still write lines,
yeah,
and just go, oh, the missed opportunities of the old, especially because are you essentially retired now from day job work? Okay. So yeah, there could be an entire segment just about the job, the things you, if you could go back and have the crummy day jobs you had all of your life and the lines you would have said. So that'll show them in retrospect that nobody cares about. I'm going to call, I worked at a movie theater in London and the name of the manager was Mr. Hilton. And he would go every day at lunch and get drunk. And so he would come back just reeking of booze. And he was the manager. And then my direct manager was the manageress. And that was what she was called in 1988. the manageress. And I was like, I hate when they do that S business, like comedian. Whenever anyone says comedian, I always say, if you would like to diminutive, if you would like to use the diminutive and belittle me somehow, please call me a comediette. Because that would be the dumb answer. Do you have any, so the military gigs that you're about to do, Linda Marcus Smith, are they open to the public or are they just for the military?
Yeah, they're just at Air Force bases and at VA facilities. But I'm producing four shows by the end of the year on military days here in New York, one at Rodney's, West Side, QED, and somewhere else. Forget.
Okay. And if you go to at Linda Marcus Smith on Instagram, you will probably see a nice flyer or an okay flyer.
My person that does flyers does the very best he can, and they get everything out you need. Like,
All of the information will be on that flyer, just so you know. Thank you so much for doing the Dork for us. This has been super fun.
Thank you so much.
And it worked. I'm so pleased.
I'm glad to get to know you, Jackie Cation.
That's right, Jackie Cation.
Cation.
I have to hit stop somewhere. Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?